We continue the Shiur in Gemara.
A topic we are on again spoke about medication or cures for certain types of illnesses. As was stressed, there are serious types of illnesses where a person is permitted to violate even the strictest laws of the Torah. As for example, in the Chol Shabbos, in Kippur, but not, of course, the basic three, even if it's a matter of life and death. If it's a matter of certain death, even a person cannot violate the din of avodah zarah, idol worship, or murder, or adultery. Those are the only three exceptions to that rule. Otherwise, if it's a matter of life or death, a person can negate the mitzvahs of the Torah. You're allowed to eat on kosher and so on, if those items will help to save the person's life. There are, of course, other types of illnesses that are not as serious, but that are discomforting. We come now to one case, an actual case, dealing with Rebbe. Rebbe is the name given in the Gemara to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Turner who compiled the six sections of the Mishnahs. Rebbe, as is known, as we've had previously, Rebbe was the tzaddik of his generation. He was the chief rabbi, he was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, and as a tzaddik, because he was the leader of the Jews, he undertook the serious task of seeing to it that through his actions the sins of all the Jews would be forgiven. In other words, he agreed, he volunteered to heaven to suffer for the sins of all Jews. Physical suffering. The Gemara says that he volunteered for a series of sickness, suffering, actually a case of agony, for a period of 13 years, 7 years of a stone in the bladder, which is extremely painful, a kidney bladder stone, and without being able to pass it, of course. This is extreme torture. And 6 years of constant toothaches. These are the worst, most painful types of illness. It's simple pain, agony. And he took this upon himself to forgive for the sins of others. This is the case of a true tzaddik. The Gemara says that during those 13 years, there was no case ever of a shortage of rain. There always was abundant rain, abundant crops in Eretz Yisrael. There was constant prosperity. But as soon as those 13 years were up, then there began a series of droughts, shortages, to show that it was in the Zechus of the Bina Kodesh that there was this abundant livelihood for all Jews. His Zechus covered the entire Jewish people. You want to tell us now about in comparison, a minor type of ailment. But once Rabbeinu HaKadosh had a sickness internally, type of stomach ailment, which of course was painful, very discomforting, and for this he said that there is a cure, there is a type of medication, which is called a wine of apples, apple wine, or apple cider. Of course, we know that yayin, wine, is very good. Wine is blessed. Wine is important. Wine, in general, stands for kedusha, for holiness. The word kiddush is synonymous with wine. We make kiddush on Shabbos or on Yom Tov to proclaim, to herald the Shabbos or the holidays. You make the kiddush on wine. The word yayin itself is kedusha, it stands for seid. All the different types of kedusha are combined or attached to this yayin. Therefore, because it is that holy, it is incumbent upon a Jew to watch this wine and see that it has no contact with the tumor of a goy. If a goy touches this wine, Jewish wine, it becomes usur. Becomes Yayin Nesach, or Stam Yedom, years back it was usur completely, it was forbidden to use it at all. Had to be poured out, it could not even be sold or given away to a goy. Later on it became stam yeino, which means that it could not be drunk. You could then give it away as a gift to a goy, but it could not be used, could not be imbibed. And this rule applies today too. If a goy touches wine today, then it is not allowed to be used for kedusha or to be drunk at all. The fact that maga akum, touch of a goy to wine, makes this wine tummy. Then the question arose whether this refers to the wine of grapes or also to the wine that is derived from apples. Apple cider has the same rule. About this, Aveda HaKadosh was in doubt. He knew that this apple cider or apple wine was a cure for the stomach ailment, but he did not know whether, he did not recall this din, having learned the din, as to whether this is included in the din of Yayin Nesach. So he asked about, anyone was aware of this fact? Does anybody recall from his ancestors, the past generation, his father, his rabbis in the past, about this din? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi told Rabbi HaKadosh, he related that his father Rabbi Yossi, the elder Rabbi Yossi, once had the same type of stomach ailment, and they brought to him this apple cider from the home of a guy who had kept this for 70 years. As long as it stayed, the stronger this wine became, and it had this therapeutic quality. It could cure a stomach with this type of ailment. In fact, it could probably burn out any stomach. Rabbi Kodesh was elated over this information. He stated that he appreciated this information, and so he asked if anyone knew where this wine could be obtained. They found this wine in the home of a guy. It was brought to Rabbi Kodesh, drank it, and he was cured. Then he made the statement saying that we must be thankful to Hashem, who has allowed his world to be placed in the hands of humans who guard it well. They watch over his world well. Which means that we thank Hashem for the fact that here was even a guy who had maintained watch over wine for 70 years and bringing about the type of wine that could cure his ailment. For this he gave thanks to Hashem. In the Mefarshim explained further, first there are some Mefarshim who dispute this entire thing. They say we cannot take that word literally, because apple cider is decidedly not a cure for stomachache. It's a means of getting a stomachache. To drink enough apple cider will surely give you a pain. It's not healthy, especially for a weak stomach. So therefore, this Gemara must mean a different type of fruit rather than apples. Probably, they say it means the pomegranates. Pomegranate juice looks like wine too, and does have a curative quality. There are some also think that we find the Gemara in Shabbos, where Tosfos brings that an esrog is a very health-giving fruit too, and it's also called tapuach, an apple. This may have been the juice of an esrog. In addition, Moshe says that what the statement by Rabbi HaKadosh, who said that we thank Hashem who gave his world over to those who watch it well, this means that originally the world, which was the world that existed, when Adam HaRishon was created, he was placed in Gan Eden. There were many trees there too, trees, vines, and the pasuk says Hashem placed him in Gan Eden, the Avda Ulishamra, to watch, to guard over this Garden of Eden, the trees there, the fruit there. However, this was only a duty of watching over it. He was not free to use that fruit. it could eat some of it, some of the fruit was permissible, while he was in the process of watching. There is a din that a payel, a worker, who works for his master or for his employer, while working in a field or in a vineyard, is permitted to eat from the fruit there. He is not allowed to take any of that fruit home. Now, when Hashem sent Adam and Eve out of Gan Eden down to this world, he then made him a balabais, the owner, the master of this world. Oretz Noson Levnei Adam. Hashem gave this world now, gave it to be owned by the children of Adam, which means then that when the Bein HaKadosh said, Baruch Hashem, gave his world to the watchers, to those who watch, those who previously watched over Gan Eden, and now are the owners of this world, and that is why we can benefit from the fruit that was taken care of by this guy. Of course, again, to possibly answer the questions of all the Mefarshim, all the commentaries who maintain that the wine of apples or apple cider is not curative, is not that healthy, it is possible, again, as Tosfos says, you must keep in mind the fact that the Gemara is filled with a lot of medicinal facts, medicinal facts, a lot of different types of cures, different types of herbs, which are used to cure different ailments. We find that Rambam too, Rambam Zohar writes a whole sefer about sefer nefuos, different cures. That Tosfos says, remember that times have changed. Times have changed, nature has changed. The nature of the human body has changed. The nature of the elements themselves, the ingredients in different types of foods have changed. And so, it is possible, it is fact, that that which was good 2,000 years ago for a certain sickness, today might be harmful. And that which was futile, useless then, might today, according to the change of the physiological nature of a person, might today be able to cure the illnesses of today. This is definitely possible. We can say then that the Yayin Tapuchim, the apple wine or apple cider, at that time, this was close to 2,000 years ago, could have been the cure for the stomach ailment, whereas today it could be actually harmful. And it's an important fact to note that nature has changed and nature keeps changing according to the will of Hashem. Nature, of course, does not mean Mother Nature. Nature means Hashem. The Zohar Kodesh points out, Hateva Begimatria Elikim. Hateva, nature, Begimatria Elikim is Hashem. Hashem is the force of nature. Hashem controls nature. As we'll see later on, in the astronomy too, the same rule applies. The Gemara continues now a different topic, speaking about the crown for a Jewish king. The first king of the Jews was King Shaul, but he was really a temporary king. He is not actually classified as the king of the Jews. First real king, officially, was King David. First and the last, meaning that King David was the first king. The family of King David was officially a family of kings chosen by Hashem. Hashem said that the king of the Jews will come from the tribe of Yehuda. The tribe of Yehuda, Zohar HaKadosh says, why specifically that tribe? Why that name? Because the word Yehuda contains exactly the four letters of Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, plus the letter Dalet, which stands for David. So that is the will of Hashem, that King David, from this tribe, shall be king forever. David, Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam. Forever means that his descendants are remain as leaders, as kings, royalty of the Jews, exclusively. Forever afterwards, meaning that the eternal king, Moshiach, will be Moshiach ben David, from the family of King David. Well, the Gemara says that the crown of a king can be used, worn only by the king himself. The Atorah, the crown, a Keser Malchus, crown of kingdom. What was King David's crown like? The Gemara says it was something very special. The weight of the crown was a kikar zohov, solid gold, weighing a kikar, which is approximately 3,000 shekels. We figured out it's 60 mona. A mona is 100 dinarim, and a kikar is 60 mona, which is about two dinarim to a shekel, which would make it about 3,000 shekels. This is an extraordinary weight. Imagine this weighs hundreds of pounds, possibly more. The Gemara asks, how could King David have worn a gold crown that weighs hundreds of pounds on his head? The Gemara answers that above King David there hung an unusual item, a very powerful magnet. It was so powerful and calibrated exactly to lift the weight of the crown just above the head of King David, to hold it there. This is how he was able to wear this crown while on his throne. This would mean that only on the throne itself. He couldn't walk around with this magnet above him. Second answer the Gemara gives, more so the Gemara says, what this really means is that in the crown there was a diamond that was worth a kikar zahav. The value of the diamond was a loaf of gold, which means the value of about 3,000 shekels of gold was the value of this diamond. Now the Gemara says further, since we have a din that a person must wear tefillin every day, how could we reconcile the fact that he wore a crown plus tefillin? How do you have room for a crown plus the tefillin? The Gemara answers, it is fact, according to the din of tefillin, according to the measurements, that it's possible for a person to wear two pair of tefillin simultaneously. And of course, we have that general rule today with the two kinds of tefillin that are worn by certain people, tefillin of Rashi HaKadosh, the tefillin of Eid HaTam. Nowadays, these two pair of tefillin are worn successively. First, we put on Rashi's tefillin. After Shachar's, after the Shmoneh Esrei, we put on the Eid HaTam's tefillin. But prior to this, in fact, there are still some who do so, who wear both pair of tefillin at the same time. The Arizal, for example, wore both Rashi and Eid HaTam at the same time throughout the entire davening. Which means then that there is room on the head, a proper place on the head, to wear two pair of tefillin at the same time. Now, most of the day, one pair of tefillin is worn. It's just during the davening itself that one would have two pair of tefillin. Most of the day there is only one pair of tefillin worn. Therefore, the Gemara says, since there is room for two pair of tefillin, there would be room then for a crown plus a pair of tefillin. He was able to wear tefillin plus the crown at the same time. Now the Gemara says further, about this crown would testify definite proof from heaven as to who is fit to wear the crown. It was not a crown that any person could put on his head and wear it comfortably. This crown could be worn only by that one who was designated from heaven as the King of the Jews. This we find in a statement. If you go back in history, you recall that Ahaziah, the King of the Jews, descendant of King David, Ahaziah was killed during his reign by Jehu. Then it would mean that his son would take over the kingdom. But his mother, Ataliah, was sort of an evil woman. She craved the throne herself. She went quietly and slew all of the descendants of King David, the children of Ahaziah, and took over the throne herself. Unknown to her, though, Ahaziah's sister rescued, saved an infant that was Yayosh, the son of Ahaziah, saved this child, took the child's nurse, and kept this child hidden without the knowledge of this child's grandmother, Atalia. The child was kept hidden for 6 years. At the end of the 6 years, she revealed this fact to the Kohen Gadol, Yehoyada. Kohen Gadol was stunned by this news. There is still a member of King David's family to take over the throne, rightfully. So he planned a coup, which he invited all of the leaders of the Jews then to the Beis HaMikdash. Still, it would be a very special announcement. And at that time, he revealed to them that there is a member of Ahaziah's family, one of his sons who is still alive, and one who rightfully is the heir to the throne. Atalia was upset by this, came to the Beis HaMikdash, and there she was put to death immediately. And Yayash took over the throne, became the king of the Jews. But the Pasuk says that Yayash was first tested to prove whether he was really the son of Ahaziah, really the son of King David. How would you test the child, 6 years old, to see if he is, what proof could he have to show that he is a descendant of King David? Here the Gemara tells us the test was, they placed this crown upon his head. This crown could fit only those who are descendants of King David. So that today, if any person entertains the thought that he is a descendant of King David, in that he is entitled to the throne, let him try to put on the crown of King David and see if it fits. What is so special about this fit? The Gemara says that all those who descended from King David who were fit for the throne had an indentation on the head, this place where the tefillin lie. Just above the forehead, the head was indented that the crown could slip into this indented part, slip into it and rest comfortably in there. If the head was smooth, or even it had bumps, but it was not indented exactly to fit the crown, it was known then that this person was not one who was rightfully fit to wear this crown. We find further proof, just before the passing of King David, when it had not yet been decided who would take over the crown, we find that Adoniyahu ben Haggis, one of the family of King David, proclaimed himself as king. And again, he drew people to himself. There again, the Tanya says that he was tested. They placed the crown upon his head. The crown did not fit. It could not go onto his head. And they knew that he was a fraud. The crown did fit King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, knowing then that he was the rightful king. This is the special power in the crown of King David, which we know that when the time comes, this secret will out. When Mashiach comes, will be a very special way of testing him for proof that he is the descendant of King David, fit to wear that crown. Of course, this is not really the test of Mashiach. We believe implicitly that Mashiach comes will be in a series of miracles. Miracles that will prove conclusively that this is Mashiach coming to bring to us the impending victory for Jews, to return all Jews to their rightful status as the leading nation of the world, the nation of Hashem, to return to us the land of Eretz Yisrael, the entire land, all its boundaries, exactly as given to, promised to Avraham Avinu by Hashem, and to have the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt, for us to live there, forever afterwards to serve Hashem. That, of course, is, we mention that because it's very important, very vital to us, since this is momentary. Shiach, this is the good information, very solid information we want to impart to you, this knowledge, this fact, that Mashiach is coming momentarily. It may be tonight. Of course, if he does, he's very welcome. Do not hesitate to welcome, to accept his presence. But it is that momentary, and we expect his coming now, and to rejoice with the victory over all the enemies of the Jews, and the celebration of the Eretz Yisrael living up to its proper standards, with the Constitution being the Torah itself. The Gemara tells us that throughout the ages, many times forms, disputes, controversies between the leading rabbis of the Jews, who spoke strongly, intensely about faith, Emunah and Hashem, faith especially monotheism, Hashem Echad, while there were the Epicurean, the Kaifanim, the atheists, Epicurean, Kaifanim, one word for all that is philosophers. The philosophers, especially the Greek and Roman philosophers, who were atheists, who believed in idol worship at that time. Nowadays, we have the same idol worship. Idol worship means one who does not believe in Hashem, does not believe in the word of Hashem, is considered an idol worshiper. Whether it's himself that he worships, or the money, or power, but if he does not believe in Hashem's word, he is an atheist. These are the philosophers of today too. Hence, the topic, the subject of philosophy, is puzzle. It is an unconscious subject to pursue, because it is filled with thoughts of atheism, filled with theories that are against true faith. You want to tell us of a discussion between the philosophers and the elder rabbis in Rome. When rabbis were asked the question by these philosophers, since you claim, they said to the rabbis, you Jews claim that Hashem is opposed to, is against Avodah Zarah, so much so that if a Jew worships idols, the penalty is death. And the penalty is the worst type of death. There are four types of death meted out according to the Torah. The most serious one is death by stoning, skila. Penalty for idol worship is skila. If idols are that bad, then why doesn't Hashem, in all his power and all his glory, why doesn't Hashem eradicate them? Why doesn't he show his power to the world, show that he is the ruler, he is the creator, by destroying these idols? Let him prove it. Surely he has the power to do so, according to you. The rabbis replied very simply. They said, of course, Hashem would do that, but for one thing. If the idols would consist of just idols alone, statues, then Hashem would do that. But note that idol worship consists of worshiping the sun, the moon, the stars. These are items that are very necessary for the world. The world needs them. The existence of the world is dependent upon the sun, the moon, and the stars. So why should Hashem destroy his world, his creation, because of these fools? Therefore, it is a decision of Hashem that let the world continue as it is, not to destroy the sun, the moon, stars, which serve as idols for these fools. Let these things continue, and these fools will eventually have to pay the ultimate price. Hashem will eke out vengeance against them later on. These philosophers pursued the question and said, if that is the case, then why doesn't Hashem show again? Let him leave the sun, moon, and stars to remain. Let him just destroy the other idols, these statues. Rabbis replied again, if Hashem would do that, imagine the rejoicing on the part of the sun worshippers. They will say, this is proof that the sun is an actual idol, because it is not being destroyed. For that reason, then, Hashem says, let these fools enjoy themselves, but know that a day of reckoning will come. No one can escape the penalties for idol worship. Well, the Gemara continues on and says that the philosophers, in the discussion with the rabbis of Rome, were told further. The rabbis saw they were not satisfied. They said to these philosophers, let us give you a better example. We gave you an example of the sun, the moon, and the stars. Let us say, for example, that a person would steal a bushel of wheat, of grains of wheat. Then, this is a stolen item. There was a crime committed with this bushel of wheat. He would then take this wheat and plant it, sow it in the field, and expect the field to grow. Now, what would you say then? Because of the fact that this person violated the command of Hashem, do not steal, therefore Hashem should alter the process of nature and not allow the field to grow? Of course not. Hashem is not going to change nature because of this evil person. So what Hashem does is, he planted stolen goods, it will grow according to the rules of nature. But you, the thief, will pay for it. Furthermore, put this into a still clearer light, a much more serious case. He says, what if a person, Chas V'Shalom, commits adultery? That is the worst type of crime possible. Commits adultery, and the woman, this married woman, with whom adultery is committed, becomes pregnant. What do you think should be done? Should Hashem change the rules of nature and not allow her to give birth, or to allow this tragedy to take place, this evil results of giving birth to a mamzer, an illegal child, and then to penalize this person who committed the crime? The answer is, we find in a pasuk, where Hashem says, Kaviyachla, Hashem bemoans the fact, and says, look at these Rishayim, look at these evil people, who the seal of a king, every king has his own seal, special seal that is owned exclusively by the king, used by the king only. The seal of Hashem is the Tzelem Elokim, the image of Hashem which Hashem gave to humans. They were created in that image, called the image of Hashem, meaning Hashem's seal, and injected in them is the soul, the spirit that comes from the Shekhinah, the spirit of Hashem. Hashem says, here is the case of a Rasha who commits a crime and forces me to give this image to an illegal child, to bring about the birth by this woman, bring that illegal child into the world, and to have this illegal child go about in life carrying this image, the seal of Hashem. Because of this, Hashem says, this brings down upon the world the anger of heaven, and there is a very serious justice to be paid, the ikdab. We note that there were three examples given by these rabbis. These were the three we stated, the three basic laws, which are more important than even life or death. Three were, one, they said if a person commits the crime of idol worship, worshipping the sun, even in a case like that, Hashem will still not destroy the results. He will allow the sun to remain, though it's being worshipped. The case of murder, you know, the Gemara says that stealing at times is tantamount to murder. You take a person's money, it could mean like taking his life. Adam hu anefesh. Money could be the lifeblood of a person. Yet in this case, though he steals, Hashem will not change nature and will allow this to take root in the ground and to grow. Third case of adultery, though this worst of all crimes is committed, Hashem will still allow nature to take its course, the child to be born. These three prove, therefore, that though the greatest crimes were committed, Hashem will not, for the sake of these Nishoyim, change his creation, change the nature of his world. But they should know that the Hashem vows vengeance eventually. The Gemara says further, on this topic, the as far as vengeance is concerned, as far as penalties are concerned, one of the philosophers asked the chief rabbi of the Jews, Rabboni Gamliel. The question was, why does Hashem give vent to his anger to those who worship the idols? Why not show his anger, destruction, to the idols themselves? Why destroy the worshippers? Why not the idols themselves? They are the evil itself. Gamliel answered, his reply was, I'll give you a mushel, an example. There was an important official, a governor, or a king, who had a son who was very ill-behaved. Not everyone is zechut to have nachas from children. He had a very bad son, an evil son, and this son showed complete disloyalty, disrespect, arrogance to his father, the king. The son had a dog. To show his disrespect to his father, he called the dog by his father's name. This naturally angered the father. It angered him so, he wanted to punish as severely as possible the perpetrator, the one guilty of a crime. Whom did the father punish? The son or the dog? Naturally, he punished the son. In this case, Hashem is the Father in heaven. We are his children. If a person will call an idol, Has V'Shalom, as one he worships, that's like calling a dog by a father's name. Therefore, naturally, Hashem will punish the idol worshiper and not the idol. This philosopher was incensed. He was furious. You call our idols dogs? That's the case then. How come that they have powers? They are real. Gamliel said to him, what did you see in these idols that is of any value? And the philosopher said, well, in our city, there was a major fire that broke out. And in this fire, the entire city was consumed, was razed to the ground. One thing remained. The idol remained standing and was untouched. Doesn't that prove the greatness of the idol? Gamliel said, it's very simple. Also, again, the case of a king who had one of his lands, one of his cities, who rebelled against the king. The king sent an army into the city, and he destroyed the rebels. Against whom did the king do battle? Against the living people or against the dead ones? Naturally, against the live ones. Here too, Hashem sent the fire to destroy your city of philosophy. He destroyed the live ones. The idol is a dead piece. It's nothing. That's why he didn't do battle against them. The fire didn't singe this idol. The philosopher said, you call the idols dogs? You call them dead? If it's that bad, why doesn't Hashem destroy them? Again, the same reason applied. Gamliel said, because of the fact that for the sake of these fools, Hashem is not going to perform a miracle. Hashem would destroy these idols and would show a miracle from heaven. Hashem does not do that. Let these fools mislead themselves, let them be misguided. But know that eventually they will suffer in this fire, this conflagration on earth, or even more so in the future. But a penalty will be taken against them because the worst basic sin is idol worship. Gemara says the further discussion by Agrippas, who was a Roman general, and who asked, Gamliel, this question. Isn't it true that jealousy is generally exists on the part of a wise person, a chacham, who is jealous of his competitor, one who is as wise as himself or wiser, or on the part of one who is powerful, one who has power, and he's jealous of one who has more power. In that case, then, how come that the Pasuk says, warning about idol worship, Hashem says, because I am Hashem Kael Kana, Hashem of jealousy, Kaviyacho, jealousy of vengeance. Kana means jealous, and one who avenges. So then, wouldn't that prove that these idols have value? Chas v'shalom. Neil said, definitely not. The fact is that the idols are worthless, because if a man has a wife, in those days the rule was prevalent that a man could marry more than one wife. Nowadays, of course, we are more fortunate. But then, being able to marry a second wife, the first wife would become jealous if she sees that her husband marries an additional wife who is inferior. Second wife, to which the husband would now turn to one who is inferior to herself, this would infuriate her, because why is he going to one who is not as good as I am? The second one was better, she could understand her husband's motives. In this case, then, Hashem could not be jealous of a second wife. Could not be jealous if it was a chacham like himself, kaviyacha. But since the second one, the adultery committed by the Jews, is with an idol who is inferior, therefore the word jealousy applies, and the word vengeance. Hashem avenges this act on the part of those who worship idols. Finally, the Gemara says that one Jew said to Rabbi Akiva, statement was, you and I both agree that idols are worthless, they do not possess any kind of life in them, these statues are meaningless. Yet, how come that we see cases then, this was 2,000 years ago, and in the papers we have seen or read of cases where this was repeated comparatively in our time too. Cases where these idols exist, and people who are ill, maimed, crippled, go to these places, they enter there, they stay there for a while, they make contact with this idol, and they walk out completely cured. The so-called miracles of these idols. And it is a fact that does happen. Why so? If these idols are nothing, there's no life to them, there's no value to them, what brings about this cure? The Akiva answered, let me give you a mushal, an example. Case of a man who was very wealthy and who was very trustworthy. He was trusted by everyone. This man had people come to him and give him their belongings for safekeeping, their wealth. Every time that a person gave him something for safekeeping, he would tell them, see to it that you have two witnesses to note this transaction. I don't want to have any problems arise later on. There's one case, finally, where a man came and gave him a large amount of money, and neglected to bring two witnesses. This man left. This man's wife said to him, we have a chance now to become wealthy. Let's deny the fact this man gave you this bundle of money. This man replied, this Ish Nemon, this honest, simple, sincere man said, because of this fool who neglected to bring the witnesses, I should lose out of my honesty, Chas v'Shalom? Definitely not. He did show, the Bikiva said, was that the people who come to these places of idol worship and are cured there, they are cured because of the fact that in heaven a time came for this person to be cured. How that occurs is the yisur, the sickness, the illness itself is a messenger of Hashem. It is an angel disguised as a sickness. The angel is told, go to this person, stay with him for a few hours, a few days, a period of time, and the time is up, come back, return to heaven. Now, this person goes to the idol, place of idol worship at that exact time, when the angel must leave, should that angel refuse to leave because of this fool, the angel goes back to heaven, the person is cured, though he might get the wrong impression that it was the idol that cured him. This is because of the angel's loyalty to Hashem's command. This is what the Tefillah says, Chalayim, Rayim and Amonim, sicknesses that are sworn from heaven to return at a given time. At no time ever does an idol have any kind of power at all.